As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, I'm Lydia.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Adam. Let's talk Hoya.
Hello, everybody. Annyeong.
Hola.
Hi.
Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Hoya. And today, we have a super, super special guest that we're going to have on here. And honestly, I feel like this is not only for the Hoya heads, but for everybody, whether you're a philodendron, alocasia, whatever plant makes you happy. This episode is for everyone because we're going to be talking about beneficial bugs.
Bennies, bennies, bennies.
So without further ado, here we go. Alrighty, so today we have a special guest here with us today. Jamie at Copper Lattice is here, and we're super, super excited to talk about beneficial insects with her. So hello, Jamie.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Thank you guys so much for inviting me on. It's a real privilege and a pleasure to be able to be here tonight and chat about beneficial insects. Super excited for this conversation.
Yes. So for anybody who doesn't know you, Jamie, tell us a little bit about who you are. Who's Jamie?
Sure. I mean, so ironically, this is probably the hardest question of the podcast, right?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
So my name is Jamie. I am one of the co-founders of DMB Beneficials. You can also find me on Instagram at my own handle, which is Copper Lattice. And DMB Beneficials is an all-volunteer organization. And essentially, we have one main big mission, which is to improve the houseplant community's access to quality, evidence-based information about pest management on houseplants using beneficial insects and biocontrols, which is a mouthful, but it basically means like we want the houseplant community to be able to access quality vetted information about pest management and to have sort of easy access to how to use beneficial insects. To do this, we have two main activities. One is we organize group orders in cities around the country. For those of you who, you know, maybe you may have like put your toe into beneficial insects, or even if you're sort of more knowledgeable about them, it becomes clear very quickly that they're kind of cost prohibitive. The insects themselves are actually quite cheap, but the sort of mandated overnight shipping can get really pricey. And it just, you know, it really isn't always a financially sustainable option for people, given that shipping cost. So we organize group orders in cities around the country to both keep the product cost low for you, as well as to lower that shipping cost. And we also provide free personalized consultations. So if you're like, I love beneficial insects, but I don't know how to use them, you know, we'll walk you through sort of what you need for different like pest management things. We also put out educational content, you know, posts and blog posts and newsletters and things. So, you know, we are really, really dedicated to this sort of quality pest management information using beneficial insects.
That's so awesome. How long has it been that you guys have founded DMB Beneficials?
Yeah, so we started super informally back in 2020. We started just in DC. I was using beneficial insects and I was like, wow, I can't afford this. Does anybody want to go in on a group order? And there was so much interest. And the sort of main response that I got was, oh my God, yes, but how would I use them, or, you know, which ones would I need? So, you know, the story of my life is kind of like, oh, like I'm happy to help. And so we started really informally in DC. And I always joke that like the bugs speak for themselves because, you know, it's so effective. People loved it and it was happening in DC and then it just kind of, you know, spread out among different cities. So now, you know, what started super informally back in 2020, 4 years has grown into, I think we have now 26 chapters in cities around the country. So yeah. So it's been a really wild ride. It's been super fun and really inspiring to be able to participate with the plant community in this way.
That is so awesome. Yeah, but 26. Brutal. I mean, that's mm-hmm. like so many places that have access yeah. to being able to use beneficials. Like, that's so amazing.
Yeah. It's been really fun. It's really, and you know, I mean, one of the inspiring things about it is that people are ready to sort of show up and change not just their pest management practices, but to like support the plant community and continuing to learn. And that's been so amazing to watch people like take that knowledge and then share it with their friends and with their neighbors. You know, that's been also super inspiring to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely talk a little bit more about like go a little bit more in depth about beneficials and the types of bugs and things like that, because like I said, we have the guru on the line, so we will talk about that. But, you know, I feel like everybody who like gets into beneficial insects or starts using them, like there's some kind of story behind it. And so I want to know, like, where did it start for you? Like, what sparked that interest for you in beneficial insects?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question and kind of a little bit of a winding story. So I grew up on a farm, so I've always been fairly familiar with agriculture. But I went to grad school and ended up working in international policy, specifically focused on sustainable agriculture, specifically in conflict zones. And I ended up working in rural El Salvador, in an area around the Bay of Jiquilisco, which is kind of in southern El Salvador. It is one of the largest remaining intact mangrove ecosystems in all of Central America. It's super biodiverse. It's incredibly beautiful. And but it's also super rural. So all of the communities that live around this bay were historically both sort of dispossessed of their land and exploited by large agrochemical companies, mostly growing sugarcane, but also corn. And in response to this history of dispossession and exploitation, they developed this amazing culture of community organizing. And they are so dynamic, not, you know, their sort of community organizing around their sort of lack of access to basic infrastructure services, but also in their agriculture, because this history of chemical intensive farming has completely destroyed their soil. Mm. And it's also led to an extremely high incidence of kidney disease. So in response to this, both to like, you know, fix their soil and protect the health of their communities, they've been, you know, sort of developing and also training local farmers and local community members in agroecology. And agroecology, for those of you who aren't super familiar, is basically, you know, how can our agricultural practices really lean in to the existing biodiversity of the ecosystems where we live? Because our plants, you know, they have natural defenses against pests, they have natural defenses against diseases. They rely on that soil microbiome, on their leaf microbiome, on just like their own plant community, like all of the plants that are around them, to be healthy, to, you know, prevent pests and to prevent disease. And agroecology sort of really, really leans into that. So I've been working in this region now. I still do. I'm also the director of an organization that provides technical and financial support to this work in this region. But because of this, I've been kind of in this intermediary space between, you know, these sort of technical experts in agroecology and sustainable agriculture, even conventional agriculture. And being in so much in that work, when I would step out of it and step into my home space, you know, and look at my houseplants, it was like, okay, well, I can't divorce myself from all of that. Right. You know, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to like erase that knowledge. So how do I, you know, translate this work and this experience and this understanding into how I respond to pests on my houseplants? And my response was, well, I'm going to put bugs in my plants. Like, I'm going to bring beneficial insects into my home. It'll be fine.
Oh my gosh. That is so remarkable. I really didn't even know, you know, like your backstory and like your occupation and things of that nature. And the fact that that can intersect into your hobby, I mean, there's something so amazing about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been extremely powerful work in a really powerful region. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to bring all of that sort of understanding and knowledge and then translate it into, you know, not just my houseplants, but, you know, the plant community's sort of understanding of pest management and how we can relate to, you know, our even the tiny, tiny ecosystems on our own houseplants is really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you're a houseplant collector. What does your collection look like? What is it that you primarily have, and how long have you been collecting for?
So I've been collecting for, I mean, probably a decade or more.
Wow.
I kind of go through like phases, I guess. I was very much an alocasia person for a long time. I loved to grow like really, really big alocasia. But I've kind of changed my like desires a little bit. I've been really into now like the sort of no ID anthuriums, because I think, you know, I've been really into the mystery of like, what are they going to grow into? And like, is it that I'm into the mystery, or do I just forget to label them? It's like unclear. But I've been really like loving, like, you know, what is this one going to look like as it matures? Because it's, you know, they don't really have an ID, or they're just some sort of strange hybrid. I've been really into those.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I, you know, a couple of years ago, because we're all into Hoya. I mean, obviously, you know, with the name of this podcast, you know, we are into Hoya, right. But I went through a little phase where I was like, you know, I think I can get into anthurium again, because there are so many people that are making anthurium crosses and hybrids, and they're just so beautiful. And that didn't go well. So I applaud you for being able to.
It didn't go well for me either. Because, I mean, I don't give them extra humidity. So it's like you either survive or you die, and they
die. The survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I love that you're able to keep those anthurium alive and you can enjoy them.
They're thriving. They're doing pretty well.
I love it. I love it. And so, you know, you ended up bringing beneficial insects into your own houseplant collection. Was there, you know, like a specific pest that you were seeing, or what are some common ones that you've just dealt with yourself?
Yeah, I mean, so the first pest that I brought beneficial insects for was, unsurprisingly, it was a very sentimental plant. It was this gigantic alocasia, like loved this plant to death, and it got spider mites. No one's surprised. So I was like, well, you know, I know that none of these sprays are going to work on it. I was like, you know, washing it like meticulously every day by hand. I was like, this is a little bit sort of labor intensive, but I really loved this plant. And it wasn't an expensive alocasia by any means. I just, you know, it was a sentimental plant and I didn't want to get rid of it. So that was the first time that I brought beneficial insects into my own house, was for spider mites. And, you know, I also like to share this story too, because then shortly after that experience, I brought in a plant that had thrips on it. And, you know, I encourage people to think of like your own beneficial insect journey is not linear. Like I, you know, treated the alocasia for spider mites with beneficial insects, and then I saw thrips and I was like, oh my God, well, thrips, obviously I can't use beneficial insects for thrips. So I treated it with pesticides, and then the plant died. And I was like, well,
no,
I was so bummed. So like, then the next time I had thrips, I used beneficial insects and it worked. And it worked great. So it was my own, like, you know, maybe lack of faith moment of like, well, no, obviously, like, must use pesticides for thrips. But then the plant did not survive. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've all been there. Like we kind of ebb and flow when there's a new pest, because there's like that instant freak out moment of, oh, my gosh. Yeah. What is this? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? How am I going to keep my plant alive? So we've definitely all been there.
Yeah. And how do I kill it fastest?
Right. How do I kill it the fastest? It's like, it's normal and a very natural feeling. But what we try to encourage people, you know, with DMV beneficials, it's like, okay, like have that freak out moment. And then like, okay, don't panic now. Like how is it like going to work best to respond? And I will always say over and over again, for those of you who already do follow me on Instagram, the fastest way to kill a pest is to remove it with water. Either just like squish it with your hand or remove it with water.
Yeah.
100%. The squishing with my hand, I can, that's something I can never do. But there's a gal here, one of our friends locally, and she's just like, you know, like squishing an aphid between your fingers. She's like, there's nothing more satisfying. I'm like, you know what? Whatever works.
Right. Like mealy bugs too, like not really that great to smush with one's hand.
Oh, I know. But how about we get into some of the beneficial bugs chat? Like, let's dive into it. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Perfect. Perfect. So, like you said, probably one of the most common questions that we get is people asking, why do you use beneficial insects at all? Or if you do use them, like why or how are they more effective than traditional pesticides?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. And I think it's a totally natural one. We are so, you know, sort of conditioned to believe, and I hear this all the time, that, oh, you know, beneficial insects are really cute, but like if you want to be serious about pest management, you have to use pesticides. And that actually really could not be farther from the truth. Beneficial insects are by sort of scientific studies more effective than traditional pesticides. Traditional pesticides are just something that we are used to given where we are in the history of cultivation. And, you know, I think part of what, you know, you guys already sort of mentioned or alluded to, this anxiety that comes around pest management, is that this traditional approach to pest management is not consistently effective. That, you know, people don't have access to the information that they need to ID pests correctly. And then the tools that they're given are inconsistently effective. So, you know, someone will be using a pesticide spray. It'll seem like it works. The pests come back. It becomes frustrating. It's just, it's not, there's no sort of consistency in its effectiveness. And traditional pesticides are developing, or pests are developing resistance to traditional pesticides at such an elevated rate that it's just really, really difficult to keep up. So not only are beneficial insects safer to use in your living space, in your own home, but they provide a type of pest management that's going to be consistently effective. Like the pests will never develop resistance to the beneficial insects. If you use them correctly, they will always work as prescribed. And there's so little, I mean, there is still user error with beneficial insects, and we absolutely are going to drill into all of those details. But I joke that it's also sort of the lazy man's pest management, because it really is just like, you know, rinse as many of the pests off as you can with just water, put the beneficial insects on there, and then sort of watch them go to work. Whereas with traditional pesticides, we're running into a lot of resistance issues, as well as just an overall sustainability that doesn't really stand up under the sort of scientific review that we're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you're saying like it's kind of the lazy man's way of, you know, dealing with pest management. And I think a lot of us are now dealing with these houseplant collections that were small at one point, and now they've become really large. And so managing pests on these large collections is like one of the reasons that we even started using beneficial insects, was because we were just trying to think of a hands-off approach to dealing with these pests. But I think the other thing when we were first getting into using beneficial insects was that component of, well, what do I use? Like, what are all these different kinds of beneficial insects that are out there? So do you mind like sharing with us like some of the different types of beneficial insects that can be used?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important to keep going through them, because, you know, one of the things that we try to do with DMV Beneficials is that there are so many different types of beneficial insects that you could use. I mean, there's just a world of them. But there are specific predators that are better for your houseplants, and becoming familiar with those is going to really sort of help not just your overall pest management, but make sure that you're using them effectively. The biggest category, and the one that I think people find the most confusing, are the different predator mites. But they're also, I would say, like the easiest foray into beneficial insects that, you know, I think a lot of people envision, if you release mites on your plants, that there's going to be like this swarm and you're going to see them everywhere, and it's going to be kind of unsightly. But they're really, really, really tiny, to the point where the question we get more often with DMV beneficials is like, did I get a dud? Did you sell me like an empty bottle of like perlite or whatever? Like, no, like they're really just that small. And so there are different species. The way that we think about beneficial insects is there are different pest mite species, There are different predator mite species that are targeted for different pests. So you would want to get the predator that is specific to either the pest that you have or the pest that you're trying to prevent. So for Hoya, the big one that anyone who grows Hoya should be using are Californicus mites. These are the predator that's going to be targeted for flat mites, but you'll also get some thrips control with Californicus. And they're a generalist enough that they might eat some broad mites for you also. So that's a really good predator to use if you're growing Hoya. Californicus is the key one. Cucumeris is another good mite. That's the mite that's going to be going for thrips primarily. Also used a lot for broad mites. I always say this, and like IPM professionals are going to like be like, no, that's not true. I use them for thrips, but I also think that I get good spider mite control from them too. So depending on what type of plant you're growing, like for the anthuriums, for the philodendrons, even for alocasia, I use cucumeris solely and get good spider mite prevention from them. You'll run into some other sort of peripheral mites. There's a mite called Thalassus. I like these for spider mite infestations at, you know, around ambient humidity, a little bit more humid, maybe like 50-60%. It's a really good mite. And also if you're having spider mites on things like citrus trees, that'll be a good predator. One of the sort of industry standard predators is going to be the Persimilis mite. That's specifically for two-spotted spider mites. That they run really fast. They're like definitely going to be for spider mites for you. And that's sort of the main like suite of mites is those four. It's like Persimilis, Thalassus, Cucumeris, and Californicus. If you know those four mites, you've got pretty good foliage pest control on your houseplants. You will see some other names tossed around, like Swirsky is a mite that, you know, people could use for thrips. It's, you know, I don't like Swirsky as much. Like they're very similar to Cucumeris, but you can use them at higher temperatures. So if you're growing at really high temperatures, Swirsky would be a good mite. And then Andersoni you can use for spider mites, but I don't think that its feed rate is really high enough to provide much houseplant control. So that's going to be the main like houseplant predator mites. You'll also see people talking about some of the bigger generalist predators. One of the sort of stars of the beneficial insect show is going to be lacewing larvae. These are a great generalist predator for anything. They'll eat mealybugs, they'll eat juvenile scale, they'll eat adult thrips, they'll eat larval thrips, they'll eat aphids, they eat a lot of aphids. But people who are maybe newer into beneficial insects, these are a little bit bigger than the mites. So you will see a lacewing larva. You'll see it on your plant. They're not super big. They're not really that scary, but they are visible. So if like you're kind of just getting into things, you know, maybe start with the predator mites and work your way up to something like a lacewing larva is a little bit bigger.
Every once in a while, I'll see like a green lacewing, like an adult outside, and I'll just snatch it up and just bring it inside. But I feel like I'm just murdering it because I'm like, well, yeah, I don't know what you're going to eat here.
I mean, if your hoyas are flowering, then, you know, it'll have something to eat.
Oh, true.
Oh, will it eat the nectar?
Yeah, they primarily eat nectar and pollen.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're also extremely gorgeous. Like I'm not a bug guy, but every time I see a green lacewing, even their eggs, I'm like, that is just so pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so delicate. They're really lovely.
So can I ask you about, when the flat mites, was it Cucumeris?
Yes. Californicus is the one you want. Yes.
Okay. So what's the humidity range for that one again?
They are really, really flexible when it comes to humidity, which I think is why they also do so well on Hoya. So their ideal humidity range is between 40-70%, but they can do higher. So you get a really good flexibility from that mite when it comes to the humidity.
So what happens to them if the humidity is lower than that? And I'm only asking this because like I keep my ambient humidity, like whatever. I don't have humidifiers in my home. But we also live in the desert, so it can get down to like 20 in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if the humidity is lower, it more affects their development and reproduction. And when it comes to using beneficial insects on houseplants, we're not necessarily releasing them to have them reproduce on our plants. That we're kind of think of it as doing a little sweep, or it's like we're using it as a tool that we're going to release them. The adults and the juveniles are going to run around and develop and eat as much as they can and then die. And then we'll have to sort of release them again. So, you know, the humidity is important and it will affect how many and how often you have to release. But it should not affect the overall effectiveness of your beneficial insect plan because we're not necessarily trying to set set up a little colony of them on our houseplants.
Okay.
Very helpful. I have a quick question for you, Jamie. So before I really knew which mites would work the best for my plants, I had purchased, there's like a mix of all of them that you can get. And when you were mentioning like Swirsky and the Andersoni, I'm pretty sure like those are part of the mix. There's like four or five different mites that are mixed in all together. What are your thoughts, if you have any, about something like that?
Yeah, so I strongly recommend against using a mix like that. It kind of goes against standard insectary practice to package all of those mites together. While you can release certain mites together on your houseplants, if they're all packaged together in a little bottle like that, they will eat each other, especially Swirsky, Swirsky and Cucumeras tend to predate on each other in general, even if there are thrips around. Like, I guess these mites just have some sort of like beef with each other. They will eat each other over thrips. So, you know, you want to sort of, it's best practice to keep, if you're using a bottle, to have the individual species in their own bottle. Most of the time, then, if you release them together on the plants, they will kind of go about their own business. But Swirsky specifically is pretty predacious on some of the other predators. And it's just not the greatest practice to put them all in the same bottle. And so, you know, I understand the allure of like, well, I don't really know which mite is which, and I don't know which one I want to order. And I'm not sure, you know, what pest I even have. You know, it can feel like a good solution to that. But it's better to sort of try to drill into at least, you know, what pest do I have and what am I trying to treat, and then pick the most effective targeted predator for that situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the one for flat mite, though, because like it doesn't seem like flat mite is a listed mite a lot of the times when you're looking up beneficial bugs. So it's like hard to know which one it goes for. But I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, and excitingly, I mean, so flat mites are a good example of something that, you know, we as DMV beneficials were kind of on the front lines of putting together the treatment plan for that and, you know, sort of working with the insectaries to say, you know, this is what we're seeing on houseplants. Because while it's not a new mite, that its sort of entry into the houseplant space was somewhat new. And so it was really cool to be able to be on that front line, to be able to do those experiments and to say, you know, this is the one, this is the predator that's working, and this is the results that we're seeing with it. That was a really sort of exciting moment in the pest management history.
Yeah, that's really neat. Also, side note, but not kind of related, but like, how do they count how many bugs you're getting?
So we are actually, and like, stay tuned for this. We're going to do a sort of collaboration with one of the insectaries to go through exactly how they do quality control. The sort of long and the short of it is that they will sacrifice like some of the bottles and they freeze them and then they count them. It's like, you know, they don't count the whole bottle, but they count the like a fraction of it and then do that to do their quality control. But, you know, we'll be going sort of more in depth. It's really, you know, I mean, insect rearing itself is super cool in the way that they like make sure that not only are you getting quality insects, but you're not getting any contamination like with the insects that you're getting or with the substrate. So it's a really, you know, this is my pitch for make sure that you order from quality suppliers because you want quality predators. I know that there are like some suppliers out there that are a little bit cheaper, but, you know, you're throwing your money away entirely if you're not getting quality predators from a quality supplier. Like, you really want to, you know, spend a little bit extra to make sure that you get like insects from a reputable supplier that have quality control measures in place and are sort of assuring you that what you're getting is going to work when you get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. I thought you were going to say, actually, we train the bugs and like 500, get in the cup. Vamanos. That sounds a lot more scientific than my thoughts.
Yeah, let's go marching one by one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's where the song came from, right?
Right? That would be great. Oh, man, I wish that was what they did. I'll put in a request.
Thanks.
Well, let's get into it, you know, because now people are going to be like, okay, I know what bugs I need to use. Well, how do I use them? I think is going to be like the next big thing. So let's chat a little bit about how we're supposed to be using these beneficial insects. And a big question is, can they even be used indoors? Because when we think of bugs, you think bugs go outside. They don't come inside my house, but chat to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely can. It is, you know, there's still similar to having pests on your plants, right? There's that moment of like, oh my God, I have this like bottle of mites and I'm going to like release them in my house. But they are, I mean, to put everyone's minds at ease, most of them, like they can't see very well, they can't move very far, and they're motivated to be on your plants, which is where their food source is. It's like, you know, if you have spider mites on your plant, the spider mites aren't like spreading around your house either. I mean, they're just on the plant, which is where their food is. So the predators tend to stay also on the plants where their food source is. You can use them inside. They're totally safe. They're non-toxic. They're not going to cause any infestation. They're not going to bite you. Like your plant, if your dog eats a sachet or like chews up a bottle, it's not going to like cause any harm to your pets. So you can definitely use them inside. But we at DMB Beneficials make sure that the predators that we're recommending for your situation are appropriate for inside, because there are, you know, like I was saying, there are a ton of different types of beneficial insects, and some of them are more or less appropriate for inside your house. Like if I told you, oh, like you have aphids, you should like release parasitic wasps in your living room, you'd be like, yeah, I mean, I think I might skip that.
Hey, it is a solution. Is it the best one?
But it is a solution, but like maybe not targeted to the context. Yeah. So.
I love that.
Yeah. So there, you can use beneficial insects inside, but you should select the ones that you're using to be appropriate for indoors.
Awesome. Okay. And, you know, sometimes my thoughts are, okay, like my next delivery of beneficials are here. I don't actually see any pests. Like what happens when, you know, your pest infestation is gone, or you don't actively have any pests in your collection and you're releasing these beneficials?
I mean, they'll just die. And I don't want to scare everybody, but I was like, generally, there probably are at least some pests somewhere in your plant collection, depending on the size of your plant collection. I'm sure there's some things for them to eat. Some of the predator mites will also eat things like pathogenic mold and fungi or little pollen spores or things like that. So there's usually at least something for the mites to eat, but then eventually they'll just die. They will just die and sort of disappear and become a part of your soil, or like they just disappear. It's basically the long and the short of it.
And like you were saying earlier, goal with these pests is the beneficial bugs is definitely not for them to reproduce. Like they really are there to get the job done, and then once they're done, they're done.
Yeah. And I've seen people, you know, in forums on the internet sort of arguing about this point of, you know, you can't use beneficial insects either A, on your houseplants, or B, preventatively, because there isn't enough for them to eat so that they can't reproduce and they can't live in that environment. And, you know, that's specifically the point, that, you know, we are using the beneficial insects like a tool. We're not trying to get them to live on our plants. They are going through as a sort of additive to our existing pest management practices. They're moving around your plants, they're cleaning up the pests that you can't see, that you didn't find, and then their job is complete. And depending on whether or not you're using them for a sort of active pest infestation or just preventatively, then when that sort of next application needs to happen, you know, it's just the time period will change. So if you're treating for an active pest infestation, you would want to do a reapplication somewhat sooner. If you don't really have any pests, you're not seeing any issues, you know, your next release might be not for another 4 or 5 months.
Gotcha. And I think the next question that we're going to talk about is kind of is one that I see like pretty often in the plant community. And we even have like listeners that'll ask us, but you know, because there are a lot of people that are still using pesticides, there's often people that'll ask, well, you know, I already used a pesticide, but I just found out about beneficial bugs. You know, can I use them together? What is the best practice for people who maybe did a pesticide application, or they are using pesticides? Can they even be used together?
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. So, I mean, we also get this question quite frequently. The sort of frustrating response is, it depends on the pesticide. But generally, for most of the synthetic pesticides, these are things like pyrethrins, Captain Jack's, systemic, even azadirachtin, the Azamax product, and any of the miticides like abamectin, any of those. For most of those synthetic pesticides, you would not use those pesticides concurrently family with beneficial insects. And for people who come to us and say, you know, I just use this, I want to use beneficial insects, what do I do? Our general recommendation is to rinse as much of the residue off as you can with water. Try to wait at least 2 weeks, and then you can start releasing beneficial insects. But you should anticipate, even waiting 2 weeks, you may still get some dieback from the beneficial insects, from the residues, because the residues can affect the beneficial insects in all different ways. I mean, in the pest insects too, in all different ways. It isn't just killing them. It can slow their feed rate down. It can, you know, make their sort of like motion a little disturbed and they can't move around as fast or as easily. So you may still experience some pesticide residue effects from those types of products for a while, even after rinsing them off. But it will eventually sort of subside. By a month, 2 months, you know, those residues are going to be completely gone. If you're using any other type of pesticide products, so things like horticultural oils, those are generally more compatible with beneficial insects. So for those, things like Monterey horticultural oil or Pure Crop is another one, you know, just don't spray it onto the beneficials themselves, because, you know, it's an oil, so it will kill them. We usually say, okay, if you're using an oil, a horticultural oil-based product, discontinue 24 hours before beneficial insect release, and then don't start again for at least 10 to 14 days after. That tends to be the average lifestyle of your predator, lifestyle, life cycle of your predator. You're going to get about 10 to 14 days out of them. So you're going to want to wait to sort of spray again until after that. So it depends on the product. If you want to use a spray product, we can recommend beneficial insect-friendly ones that you can use. But my big pest management caveat is that even if you're using a spray product, you should still remove as many of the pest insects as you can in addition to using the spray. It's not like, you know, you can do one or the other. It's like the spray can be a part of your pest management plan, but still physically remove and rinse off as many of the pest insects as you possibly can.
Okay. And so for something like flat mites, because I think about this a lot, the adults, I think when you blast them with water, they can't hang on. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they really, right. They dig those eggs down into little crevices.
Oh,
and
my God,
those stay there.
But
for the most part, like just a what you're saying is just like blast of water is probably our most helpful tool, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so flat mite eggs are very sticky. And, you know, as I was saying, I grow anthurium, so we get like 3 big leaves, but Hoyas are not quite like that. So to rinse every individual leaf by hand, I would imagine be a little bit labor intensive. So the goal with flat mites though is to really kind of target the underside of the leaf, sort of right where the stem hits the leaf itself, and to really try to get, that's where you're going to find all of those little eggs stuck, like right along the back of the leaf vein, like right along all of those little indentations. So doing everything that you can, if you're spraying with water, to kind of get that backside of those leaves, and as many as you feel you're able to, then sort of use a wet paper towel to try to remove as many of the eggs as you can. And then if you're using sort of a follow-up horticultural oil spray, again, I mean, you should still spray the fronts of the leaves, but also do make sure to get the back, because those horticultural oils are contact-based pesticides and they need to actually come into contact with that, you know, flat mite or that egg in order to be effective.
Okay. So would the horticultural oil hurt the egg?
It can prevent the egg from fully developing and or hatching.
Okay.
But your best option is still going to be to get that egg off of the leaf.
Yeah. Okay.
Perfect. Perfect. And so then now I think people are going to be wondering, okay, well, how do I then use beneficial insects effectively? You know, what is the typical life cycle? When should reapplication happen? What is it that you usually share with other individuals who are kind of pondering, how is it that I should like tackle this active pest issue, but also, you know, using it as prevention and as a preventative?
Yeah. And I mean, we'll start with prevention because that's a little bit more fun and also more artistic. So, you know, with using beneficial insects preventatively, you really get to kind of make it your own, and you can trial out different predators and you can sort of figure out what's your own application style, what works for you, how often do you bring in new plants? What are your other pest management practices like? We generally, in DMV Beneficials, we recommend doing preventative releases every 3 to 4 months, a little bit more often during the growing season, or if you're the type of person who brings in plants like a lot, like, you know, multiple times per week, you might want to then sort of shorten your preventative releases. But 3 to 4 weeks, every 3 to 4 months tends to be the sort of average preventative release schedule that works fairly well for most people. Something that I have been noticing, which is more anecdotal and less scientific, is that, you know, people start out with beneficial insects, either preventatively or for an active pest infestation, and they feel like they need to sort of apply a lot of them for that first year. And, you know, sometimes they do, that they're having a sort of active pest issue. They have thrips or they have spider mites, or, you know, they're trying to get their pest management under control. But then as you sort of move into the second year, even into the third year, where, you know, you're using beneficial insects solely as your pest management tool, people find they actually don't even really need to release them that often. I mean, maybe I'm telling on myself here, but I haven't released beneficial insects preventatively on my houseplants since, what month is it? It's May, since November, maybe December. Wow. And, you know, everything looks fine and is growing really well. So there seems to be, you know, once like the plants are, like our plants have their own sort of defenses against pests and disease, like I was saying earlier, and using those pesticide sprays can actually really lower our plant's ability to fight off pests naturally. So once you kind of switch into using beneficial insects and some of these more non-toxic horticultural oils and beneficial friendly sprays, your plants kind of regulate themselves a little bit. And, you know, I've seen a lot of our group members kind of grow into that space where, you know, their preventive routine is like very straightforward. It's super cost effective and really, really easy, that their plants are growing really well. So prevention is super fun, and you can personalize it and you can choose the predators based on what type of plants you have, what your growing environment is, and what your sort of overall life looks like. With the sort of active pest issues, when you have a pest, when you have spider mites, when you have thrips, when you have blot mites, that's when you get into more of a regimented approach. We have put together treatment plans to sort of help guide you through that. Again, those are all always customizable. So if you're like, I can't afford that, or, you know, this timing doesn't work for me, or I'm going to be on vacation, or, you know, any number of variables, that we are here as DMV Beneficials to help you customize that. But the treatment plans are there to sort of say, okay, if you have thrips though, you know, based on the thrips life cycle and based on, you know, the way that the beneficial insects will interact with thrips, this is what to expect. And this is going to be the fastest, most effective way to get rid of thrips on your houseplants. So while the prevention is kind of more like an art and like a little more fun, the treatment plans for active pest issues are a little bit more regimented. And, you know, like I've said before, we all but guarantee our treatment plans with DMV Beneficials will be successful. And because the beneficial insects are so effective, if it's not working for you, there is a reason. And we are also here like anytime, day or night, to like help you figure out what that reason is. Like there's always going to be a reason. We just have to sort of figure out what that is. So, you know, there's different ways to use them depending on what pest you have and sort of what your situation is. But I don't know. I mean, it's fun, I think. I mean, I find using beneficial insects to be way more fun than using a spray or like being stressed about my plants in the shower. Like, you know, you get to like see like these little bugs. Like sometimes you get to see them eating the pests, and that's very satisfying.
See, that's the part that I think I miss, is like that I didn't get to see, is that I wanted to witness it happening, so I knew in my brain that it was like working. And that's, I think that's what I struggle with. But also, you don't know if it's working if you're using a pesticide either. You're just like willy-nilly spraying.
Right. Right. And just like hoping that it works. And then, you know, so.
But I mean, if you join the DMV. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you join the DMV Beneficials community on Facebook, you can see people's videos of their pets getting eaten by the predators.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, when you do see, like, the bigger ones that you can see when they're, like, chomping on an aphid. Oh, yeah, like a ladybug just going to town. I love watching that happen.
I feel so bad but I do feel a little bad still. So I don't want to see it. I'm like, I know you're doing the hard work. You do you. You be awesome. Yeah. But I know that you said that there's 26 different chapters across the nation for DMV Beneficials. How is it that people can get in touch with or even check to see if there's one in their state or local to them?
Yeah. So we have a list of all of the chapters on our website. It's dmvbeneficials.com. And you can go to the chapter page and you'll see all of the currently active chapters. We are regularly onboarding new chapters. We tend to upload as if they're a computer. We tend to onboard about four to five chapters at a time. So if you are in St. Louis, Columbus, Detroit, Las Vegas, or Louisville, your chapters are on their way. If you don't see your city on the sort of chapter map and you're up for starting one, you can reach out, you can fill out our contact form, and we provide all of the training that you need. So we do all of the training, both in running the chapter and organizing the orders, but also we will train you to be a bug expert, and we give you all of the support and resources that you need to help your group members make sure that they're getting the sort of DMV beneficial standard pest management information.
Hola, Hoya friends. So we launched our Patreon, aka Peduncle Pals. It's been a joy connecting more with all of you, chatting in our Facebook group, and sharing more behind the scenes through our exclusive Patreon episodes every month. We're blown away by your support, and we're so grateful for every one of you that is joining us on this club. You can subscribe through our Patreon link through our Instagram bio, episode descriptions, or show notes. See you there.
Hey guys, Lydia here.
And Adam. As some of you may know, we co-own a online Hoya plant shop. Well, mostly Hoya. It's called The Green Plant. We're always so grateful that our passions have led us to have the ability to share some of our favorite genus with you.
We aim to have a restock at least 1 to 2 times a month and always post the most carefully and beautifully growing plants. And supporting us keeps our dream alive. And we love seeing the plants we have lovingly curated growing in your homes.
If you're in the United States and ever looking for new Hoya babes to add to your collection, just give us a browse at www.thegreenplantaz.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram at thegreenplant.az, where we always post restock alerts on our stories. And you can also sign up for our newsletter at the bottom of our shop website. And now, back to our episode. And for those who don't have, you know, a chapter that's near them, are there any signs that you look out for from places that maybe don't have like the same kind of standard that we should be looking for?
In terms of like where they could get their bugs from.
So if there's not a chapter around them, they're like, all right, I got to find a place to, you know, order some beneficials. Like, what is something that they can typically look out for to know whether or not it's a place that has, you know, the quality standards that should be met?
Yeah, so generally you want to get as close to the insectary that raises the beneficial insects as possible. As a houseplant grower, we do run into an issue with this because a lot of those gigantic insectary suppliers only sell in really large quantities. You know, I mean, if you have, even if you have 100 or 200 houseplants, I don't think that you need 400 California sachets. Like, you just don't need that many.
That's my question coming up, is like, how do I know square footage? Because I got that many. Damn little satchels everywhere.
that's too many. So you want to find a distributor that's as close to the main insectary supplier as possible. So we do provide a list of sort of vetted suppliers that we recommend, you know, and just making sure that they're as close to the insectary as possible. We can share, I mean, I think that you guys, like, we can add sort of links to the suppliers if that's helpful.
That would be awesome. Yeah. That would be amazing.
In our show notes.
Yeah.
But did you want to ask about the square footage?
So that, I think that
400 sachets is too many. That's the answer.
I think that for me, the biggest like hurdle in using beneficials was understanding what I needed to get as far as quantity.
Yeah.
And because my plants are all over my house. They're not just in they're in like sections, but there's some on one wall and on another wall and in my bedroom. And so I didn't really know, do I have to make everything touch so they can crawl through? So any information or help with that?
Yeah. And this is something that we have struggled to sort of represent graphically. We've tried all different ways to try to sort of communicate this idea. Generally, no, you don't have to make everything touch. The goal is to sort of participate with your plant collection and say, okay, what is the existing issue? Do I have an existing issue, to sort of treat that area targetedly? And then you can kind of let your attention fade if you don't have a sort of active issue going on. If you're trying to use them just preventatively, my sort of golden rule is if you're using the sachets, you need about 1/3 the number of sachets per plants that you have. So if you have 100 plants, you could get 30 sachets. Try to space them evenly among all of your plants. And then you can move those sachets every couple of days. So if you have a sachet on one plant and, the plant across the room, by the sink, doesn't have one, you can just move that sachet over there on a different day. We're using the sachets that we're using, and even the bottles that we get, are still the type of product that are designed for really big agricultural spaces. So we're super fortunate as houseplant growers that we already have, we're already getting more predators than we need. And we can kind of use that to our advantage to, move the sachet around within our living space. You really don't need a ton of predators because you're already getting way, way more than enough. So prevention, it's you'll need about, I like the sachets for prevention because I don't particularly like the substrate in my soil. And for those of you who grow in semi-hydro too, it can just get kind of messy. So the golden rule for sachets for prevention is 1/3 the number of sachets for the number of houseplants you have. And then if you're treating an active issue, I would do, if you want to use the sachets, depending on the size of the plant, you would do at least one sachet per plant with thrips, for example, or, with Californicus, or with flat mites, excuse me.
Okay.
Pro tip. Yeah, that's a really great rule of thumb. Yeah.
Now I need to know, how do the bugs know how to get out of the sachets? That's also something that I just sit there and how do they even know where the opening is?
It is really tiny. It's so tiny.
I haven't ever asked them, but this brings up a good point though. Don't make the hole bigger. You should never make the hole bigger.
Okay, well, I did.
Or open the sachet. Okay. I'm not supposed to do that.
Because you will
lose. Right, do not do that. Leave the sachet as designed, because the sachet is designed with the hole at exactly that same size to keep the humidity at the right level within that sachet, so that you will get the multiple generations developing within that sachet. If you make the hole bigger, or if you open it, you've essentially now, so the slow release sachet is designed to be a quote breeding system where you're going to get little bursts of bugs over time. So ideally you get them every 2 weeks. For the manufacturer says between 6 to 8 weeks. I'll say maybe 4 to 6, but anyway, the manufacturer says 6 to 8 weeks. But if you make that hole bigger, or if you cut that sachet open, you've now just made it like a bottle, right? Like the sort of immediate release, bulk release mites, which is fine. I mean, you're still going to get the bugs from there. You've just now kind of ended the slow release breeding system aspect of that sachet. So,
okay. So slow release basically means there's a whole different variety of life stages in that sachet.
Yeah, there's eggs and juveniles and adults. Okay. And the sachet has been designed to hold the humidity at the right level to allow them to develop and come out and reproduce. It's not a perfect system. And that's why I say that, especially on houseplants, because our living environments aren't greenhouses, I think it kind of limits the functionality of that breeding system. I don't think we get the same amount of longevity. I've had people tell me that they put those sachets into their terrariums and they get, fresh bursts of mites for 2, sometimes even 3 months. So, wow. Our environment does affect even the sachets. But you're doing everything you can to sort of not interrupt that. Humidity is important.
Okay. So they don't have to be touching. They can just, the mites will roam and they'll find the spot.
They'll find the hole.
Right. Yes. Yes.
I'm mind blown. Like, it's also science-y. I'm just like, who came up with this? Who was like, let me invent a sachet that holds humidity? I don't know. This is awesome. Right.
It's very cool.
Yeah. What are some other like pro tips? Because like as far as grow lights and that kind of stuff, time of day, anything mm-hmm. to help make sure that we're doing everything as best we can?
That's a great question. Generally what we recommend, so say like your bug box has arrived, you have them, like you're ready to release them. I make sure that I've watered all of my plants in the couple days before release, because I don't want to have to water them the day after. I want to have to move my plants as little as possible, because I don't want to disturb the activity of the beneficial insects. So in the run up to, you know, bug delivery day, I'm going to water all my plants. I'm going to do one last final release. If I have spider mites, for example, or thrips, I'm going to wash all of those pest insects off of the leaves. I'm going to set everybody up. And then I tend to wait until dusk and about the time that I'm going to turn my grow lights off. The grow lights won't harm the beneficial insects except for the nematodes. They can, as you apply the nematodes, it could harm them. But the beneficial insects can live under the grow lights, but it's just kind of nicer to release them with the grow lights off, let them get settled, and then turn them on the next morning. It's kind of like, I mean, I don't know. It's like you're in like an overnight flight, right? Like flying like the red eye, and like you walk out into like the morning in like New Jersey, and like the lights are on. Like it's just like it's a little bright, but like it feels like it should be 3 a.m. for you, not the daytime. So I try to like, you know, give them like, you know, a gentle way to be released and to figure out where they need to be is always helpful. And having your plants freshly watered will give the beneficial insects a way to get hydrated also. You know, it's important to keep them hydrated as much as you can because they are alive and they do need water.
So then with that, should we be spraying them with water, like misting? Is that a thing?
I don't, but you can. And especially if, I mean, you know, you're in Arizona and the ambient humidity is quite low. So we recommend if you're finding that, especially the predators like the lacewing larva, if you're seeing them leave your plants, it generally implies that you should mist your plants because the lacewings will only ever wander in search of water. And misting your plants can help sort of prevent them from doing that. So you can, but you don't have to. Might be better for the plant itself to mist the soil rather than the foliage. I personally am not much of a foliage mister. I don't want to sort of cause any sort of bacterial or fungal overgrowth. So yeah. Misting the soil could help kind of keep things moist for them without, you know, running the risk of damaging your leaves.
Can we put a professional opinion behind misting for increased humidity that it's worthless?
I am on the side of no.
Okay. Same.
I do not mist for increased humidity.
I remember when I first got into collecting plants, man, the misters that I bought. I remember my first year as a houseplant collector, I even got gifted a mister on my birthday.
Yep. I got one. I made a little pebble tray.
Oh, yes,
yeah. The pebble trays.
Oh, my goodness. Those are the days.
Yeah. So I'm in camp. Do not miss your leaves. But there are people who would probably disagree with me.
Yeah. And it's definitely not like we're judging or we're making fun of anyone. We're saying like we did this too. We went through it. Mm-hmm. We learned it.
Yep. Yep. And I mean, those are the things that you learn from. And that's where, you know, what I was saying earlier about like having, you know, treated thrips with pesticides, like these are all places that I know that like you guys have been, that like I have been, I've been like panic ordering systemic granules and like driving to Home Depot to like try to get them to put in my plants. Like I've been there, like I've been that person. And it's all been like a learning experience for me of like, not just what are the more effective, like pest management tools that we have available to us, but like, how do I want to show up like in my day, like with my houseplants, like with my community, you know, it feels a lot like better and like more generative to be engaging with my plants in this way. And also just more present, that like I've learned so much about like my houseplants and their microbiome and like insects. It's helped me be more present with the environment, like outside of my home, like, you know, like Adam, like you were saying earlier, like you see a green lacewing outside and like, you know what it is, you know, like that's exciting and that's super cool. You know, it's all sort of part of this like ongoing journey that like plants have always been like really incredible teachers for me. And like, this is one of the ways in which they have like really opened my eyes to how we can like show up differently, like for our community and like for our houseplants and like for the bugs too.
And for the earth.
And for the earth.
Nature superstar. Oh, gold star for you. Okay. I have a really random, like, dumb question. Were you always a bug girl? Like, were you a bug girl when you were like in kinder?
No. Okay. This is my embarrassing admission. I used to kill spiders. I had this moment where I think I was probably 23 maybe. And there were two spiders above my bedroom door and I was panicking and I got on this step stool and I killed one of the spiders and the other spider, I swear to you, it dropped down at me like it was upset at me and like angry that I had killed its friend.
Oh,
I never killed a spider after that because I just felt so much like shame and guilt of like, I killed this spider because I was afraid. Like it's the size of my, like, why did I do that?
Because, and so, you know, arachnophobia, the movie, it made us all crazy.
Right. I mean, I still find spiders to be a little unsettling. I'm not the biggest fan, but you, I just think that they're Charlotte. Very smart.
She already feels bad. So leave her alone.
I didn't
rub salt in the wound. Dang.
I should feel bad.
No.
Okay, well, I did kill a black widow spider that was outside my house, but that makes me really nervous. But I probably should have killed it. I wasn't going to rehome it, though.
Let me go to rehome it and get bitten and die.
Right? Anyway. Right. So that's where it's like, you know, being afraid of bugs, I think is normal and natural. But again, it comes back to how do we respond to it? Like, I can feel afraid and then I can respond in a way that's, you know, doesn't make me feel deep shame after I kill the spider.
Yes, I love that.
Okay, mm-hmm. Another question for you. And I'm actually, okay, I didn't mean to, but I'm wearing a shirt right now that says slow is foe, fast is friend.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, a lot of times there's people that are wondering, you know, is this bug that I'm seeing actual pest or is it something good? Like, they don't really know, especially newer house collectors. And so what do you feel about that phrase when people say slow is foe, fast is friend?
I mean, it's okay. I would say it's okay. You know, it's a good place to start. For me, and my recommendation would be, you don't have to feel like you have to become a bug expert, able to identify like every single mite or every single bug that's on your plants. But what you should try to become familiar with is, what do the pest insects look like? If you can identify the common pest insects like spider mites, thrips, mealybugs, scale, aphids, and flat mites, then you can feel pretty comfortable that anything else you see on your plant that isn't that is probably nothing. I mean, it's, you know, I use the phrase neutral bug. Like, if it could just be a bug, a springtail or a random soil mite or something that came in from outside. So starting by just becoming really familiar with, what does a thrips look like? What does a spider mite look like? And then, you know, from there, you can expand your knowledge of other bugs as much or as little as you want to. You know, the slowest foe, fastest friend. I've seen spider mites like really book it. So, like, you know, it's
like
they can move pretty fast. But I think where that comes from, and like the way to think about it too, is the predator mites and the sort of good bugs, they're going to be roving around on your plants looking for a bug to eat, whereas the pest mites are usually going to be fairly stationary, chewing on your plant. So I think that's where that phrase comes from. So that's why, like, it's okay. It's an okay way to think of things. But maybe a little bit more helpful is like, what do the pest insects though look like? So you just get familiar with seeing them and identifying them when you see them.
I really love that, because I had some, I think they're called grain mites. One company that I ordered from, that I don't order from anymore, we're not going to say names, but I think that they included a bunch of those as food.
Yeah.
Possibly. But I had a freak out because I'm like, what is this mite? Because it's like clear, translucent with like a hairy butt, which
they're kind of like moldy.
So many of them.
And I see them now every, quite often when I'm microscoping my plants and I'm like, oh, hey buddy. But, but like that kind of stuff, like those freak out, but like those are fine. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. Those are totally fine. When they overgrow, it's kind of, as you say, it's kind of like gross. It's not the greatest. And it can be, if you, this is one of maybe the easier ways, if you get your beneficial insects and you end up seeing a lot of grain mites on your plants and not a ton of predators, it could be a sign that you ordered from a supplier that wasn't that reputable. Because ideally those grain mites would have been eaten by the predators in the bottle. And if you were seeing a lot of them when you got them, it's like, well, that kind of implies that there may have been less predators in that bottle than there should have been.
Makes sense. Okay.
Good to know.
Yeah, but those will literally, I mean, they'll usually just sort of wander around. They mold as their name implies, and they like moisture.
Good to know.
They're so weird with their little like hairs that are like captured. Like they like, just like, I don't know. It's almost like an orchid mantis, but not, you know, where their hairs just have like these clumps of stuff on them. I'm like, get out of here.
Right. I'm like, okay, move along. Move along, friend.
Okay, and since, you know, we are a Hoya podcast, we talked extensively about flat mites, but there are a lot of people who still bring up root mealies. And I don't know if this is also something that aroid people are going through too, but especially in the Hoya communities, there's still a lot of people who are battling root mealies. And we personally, you know, recommend PureCrop One, but is there a beneficial or a biocontrol that you usually recommend for root mealies?
Yeah, I mean, root mealies are really hard. If you battled them, then you know that they're really challenging to totally eradicate. And they cause pretty extensive damage to plants. You see them a lot on Hoyas, as you know. Begonias are also usually a target by them because begonias have really delicate roots and they tend to do a lot of damage there. PureCrop One is a good solution. In terms of beneficial insects and other types of biocontrols, one of the biocontrols that I really like is a pathogenic fungus called Bavaria bassiana, which works really well. The accessibility downside for that is that you can only purchase it in like really, really large quantities. That's, you know, kind of cost prohibitive. So, you know, that's a good additional product. You know, PureCrop One is a good one. Bavaria is also a good one. The predators that you would want to use, where we run into sort of predator challenges with root mealybugs is that many of the predators don't make it through the whole sort of substrate like gradient, that they'll tend to stay like up at the very top. And I, like, you know, you get root mealybugs sort of all the way through. One of the main predators that will travel through all of that substrate is a beetle called the rove beetle. They kind of look like thrips, honestly. They are like, they don't look like a beetle. They're really thin. They're black. They will move through that substrate and they'll sort of take out all of the root mealybugs. But people find them a little creepy. You know, I sympathize with that. They're kind of creepy. So people tend to stay away from that sometimes, but definitely try them. They work really well. Other predators that you can use, and you can use these if you wanted to use PureCrop and the predators together, you could do that. There's a nematode species, which we refer to as nematodes SC. This is different than the one that you would use for thrips or fungus gnats. And this predator, there's been studies recently that have shown that it does a pretty good job of controlling for root mealybugs. And I would combine the use of the nematodes SC with the Stradiolaelaps soil mite, which we had, this mite hasn't come up yet, but this mite is, I would say, probably my favorite predator. I think everybody should use this mite. It should be in all of your growing mediums. They're great. They eat like a ton of different types of pests, and they do a really good job of controlling for things like root mealybugs. They'll also eat overwintering spider mites. They'll eat thrips larvae. They eat fungus gnat larvae. They're great.
Wait,
so
overwintering spider mites?
Yeah. So it's less of a problem in our houseplants because we don't get winter per se the way that the outdoor growing spaces do.
Okay.
But it's not impossible for spider mites to go into diapause in your growing medium, and Stradiolaelaps will eat them.
Oh, So I know you know this because we've talked before, but I grow mostly in passive hydro, semi-hydro. I grow in pond. I'm unsure about the how they would work in the pond situation. Has there been tests or have people experimented with that?
Yeah, so Stradiolae Labs specifically does really well in semi-hydro. You can use them in all types of growing mediums. There have been people who have used them in those sort of like rock wool, like little sort of growing things. Like you can put them, Stradiolae Labs will live in anything. So we call them a soil mite, but they definitely work great in semi-hydro. You can use them in pond, Leica. The only caveat would be when you're applying them, because they come in like a soil mixture, just put the mixture onto like a little platform, or, you know, some people you may have seen use little like cupcake liners, just so that you don't have to like get all of that dirt out of the pot. Like that's a big mess. So just apply the substrate to some sort of platform over top of the pot. And then the mites will move off into the plant, and then you can remove the platform and toss the substrate.
Nice. Pro tip.
Yeah, that's a good, I never even thought about that. I did have issues with the whole bottle and that whole like stuff that they put in there, and I would dump it on my plants and I would hate it. I'd be like, oh, this looks so gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my other like embarrassing admission is I'm a real brat about my substrate, and like, I don't want to put that stuff in there. So I'm like, I make little platforms for my soil. So.
Oh, that's, I like that. Well, you made me second guess my whole, like, not second guess too much, because my Hoya are very happy. But then when you're talking about this soil microbe and all of this stuff, I'm like, well, am I not giving my plants the best life? But also, I don't want to switch out of pond and go back to soil. So I'm like, eh, they're just going to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a personal preference. I mean, I very much, you know, I'm very much in the world of like trying to build like living soil and like, you know, help the microbiome in the soil and in the leaves. But plants, as you are experiencing, grow very well in semi-hydro. It's really more of a personal preference. And, you know, even without soil specifically, that there are still microbes that are living within the pond and within the Leica that are existing with your plant's roots. Not the same as soil, of course, but you know, you're still getting that same, you're still stewarding that same biodiversity and that same microbiome, even if you don't have soil expressly.
Okay, cool.
Good to know. See, you don't have to feel bad.
No.
Jamie said they're perfectly fine.
Exactly.
Well, Jamie, as we end the episode, something we always ask our guests is to share kind of what's next for you in your journey, whether it's, you know, in your work or with DMV Beneficials or whatever it is kind of the next chapter.
Well, I mean, a lot is changing for me. We are getting ready to do a pretty big expansion of DMV Beneficials. We are totally putting out a new line of educational materials. We're growing at our chapters and trying to sort of increase DMV Beneficials' ability to sort of be in person. So expect to see sort of more workshops, both in physical space, but also online, new educational materials, new videos. We're looking to put out sort of a line of YouTube videos talking about beneficial insects. So there's going to be a lot of content sort of rolling out for DMV Beneficials this year. Personally, I'm spending less time in DC. I'm actually in the Ozarks right now in Arkansas. So I'll be doing a lot more work with sort of bigger types of agriculture. So you'll also probably see some of that through DMV Beneficials. You know, really excited about where things have been with the organization so far. And, you know, really want to make sure that we're responding to the community's needs and continuing to sort of put out content, advice, and, you know, just building out a community space for the plant community that's really been so supportive so far. I mean, this is my like tiny dream. Like, would anyone be into like a 90s style message board on the DMV Beneficials website? I think this would be very fun.
Yeah,
so that would be so moving fun. Toward that.
Like a light, right? A Reddit light or something with, you know, less
exactly
jerks.
Yeah. Specifically for beneficial insects. Like, we don't all have to be on Facebook if we don't want to. So, you
love
know,
it.
Really looking to build out new spaces.
But
yeah.
Can we like have some sort of computer analyze someone's questions and be like, it's a springtail, okay? Like, calm down.
It's still a springtail. Still a springtail. It's usually a springtail.
Yeah. I think we would love to have you on in the future again if we have more pointed questions and we have questions from the audience, because this was so incredibly helpful. And
yeah, absolutely.
Well, Lydia and I got to witness you in action in DC when we were guests at your guys' plant swap.
Yes.
And you had a table set up, you had your microscope, and it's like, bring your plants, I'll look them over, we'll help you. And I just absolutely love that attitude. And is that also located with all the other, the branches of DMV, like, are they active in their plant communities, or is it kind of like a, it just depends on if they want to go or not, or like, how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, so we support our chapters to like sort of enact their chapter the way that makes sense to them. And you will see, depending on the chapter, there are a lot of them who are very active in their plant communities. Many of you who are listening might know them personally, your sort of local DMV beneficials, chapter heads throughout different cities. We do encourage to be sort of active out in those sort of plant events, especially with the microscopes, doing pest ID and, you know, sort of beneficial insect recommendations. I love doing it. And I mean, obviously, I like, do it all the time. And so we're always happy to, even if, you know, if you don't have a DMV beneficial chapter in your city, or like if you aren't seeing anyone sort of in person, that we always welcome. You can like send images to me. You can send them to me directly on Instagram at Copper Lattice, or we have a contact form on the DMV beneficials website. You know, we have a whole team that has all been trained to make sure that you get accurate ID and effective treatment recommendations. That's just essential to our ethos. And so you'll sort of receive that same standard of care, whether you go to your local chapter head, who I would encourage you to like find and reach out and get to know, or, you know, if you come to sort of me or the leadership team at DMV Beneficials, the organization, that you'll get that same sort of like, happy to help, let's figure it out, because it's a puzzle and a mystery and there's always an answer. You know, we can definitely get it resolved.
Awesome.
I love that. That's so awesome. And it's so exciting that there's so much more happening with, you know, DMV beneficials. And one of the questions I was going to ask was kind of what your hopes and dreams are in just that houseplant collecting space. But chatting with you, it's become apparent that we want to see this natural pest management and having accessibility for people to have that. But anything else, you know, that you would just love to see changing for people who are hobbyists and houseplant collectors?
I want people to feel less anxious about pests. Like, I want them to be able to participate with that complexity of growing houseplants, that pest management is a part of plant care. It does not mean that you failed. It does not mean that you're doing a bad job. It is a completely natural part of growing plants, and every pest that you encounter is going to be a learning experience. And my goal is for people to feel empowered to make the pest management decisions that feel good to them, that work well for them, you know, regardless of what that is. And that's where, you know, part of what we, like, I think the beneficial insects work the best. But if you're still not ready, or like you don't think that you'll ever be ready to bring bugs into your home, we can also recommend other products that will still be non-toxic and effective against the pest that you're, you know, experiencing. So my goal is that like everyone can feel empowered to respond to their houseplants and to their pest management in a way that doesn't feel anxious, it doesn't feel overwhelming, that like they can just, you know, experience it as part of their own path and part of their own learning experience. So that's my goal. Everyone, don't panic. It's fine. It'll be fine.
Everything's okay.
I don't know why I felt like I was getting emotional when you were talking about that, because I was like, yeah, every pest is like a learning experience and we've all come so far, but then also realized all of the things I didn't think about, which was like how toxic pesticides can be. And I'm just willy-nilly spraying without gloves. Like hands and arms are soaked up with it. And I'm like, Aaron Brockovich,
like, around
where
are you at?
I was going to say that there's no visual for anyone or you, but Lydia and I were like nodding our heads like we were in church, like when you were saying that, like, preach. Yes, that's like so true.
Like the younger generation would say, period.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, but yes, thank you for that. I always love having guests on the pod, and then just really seeing that, like, that humanity behind the work of whatever it is our guest does, the way you're saying, you're not like, you're a bad plant parent if you have pests, or you're a bad person if you don't, you know, treat them naturally. You're just like, here's the information. Right. Here's the goal of what we do. And here's me sharing it. And I love that, because one thing about being a plant hobbyist is like, I never feel like I have to be an expert in order to enjoy this hobby. And like what you just said really connected that for me.
Yep. It's like we are all supporting each other with our different areas of expertise. And like, for me, even just in general, like outside of the plant hobby, like how can we show up for each other? Like how can we see each other and like really support each other and like all of that myriad complexity? Like I think, and plants are one of the ways that, you know, we can continue to get better at doing that for each other. Like it's a really exciting space.
Yeah.
Love it.
Audience, I know we mentioned it and it'll be in the show notes, but you can find Jamie at Copper Lattice on Instagram. And I tell you what, you could spend a whole day in those highlight bubbles because there is so much information that you put out there. And I just personally want to thank you for your time with just Instagram information, because you'll come across my stories and I love watching stories, and I'll see like there's just like a whole chunk of stories and I'm like, oh, we're getting into it.
I'm settling in.
Yeah. But I do really appreciate you and all your efforts with that, because it is extremely helpful. So everyone go to Instagram, follow her, watch those highlight reels. If you have questions about pests, like it's super helpful.
Absolutely. And just what a joy to have you here tonight. And, you know, it always blows me away that people are willing to carve out a chunk of their time, like 2 hours of their time, to sit here and talk to us about plants, or like today, bugs, and just, you know, talking through all the questions that we have. And it's just always a wonderful time. And especially today, so informative, so helpful. And I feel like a lot of our listeners are going to absolutely learn so much from this episode today. And so just thank you so much.
No, I mean, thank you guys. I was really excited to be invited on here, and like really always, always happy to talk about plants and bugs. It's, you know, it's a constantly evolving space, and it's like really, really been, as I've said already, like inspiring to me to be a part of, and I'm glad to be able to share it with your listeners. And anytime anyone has any questions, like I've already said, you can message me on Instagram. You can fill out the contact form on the DMV Beneficials website. Maybe I'll be back. We'll do a Q&A on the podcast. You know, it'll be fun. Anytime.
Yeah. Yes. And what's the URL for the DMV Beneficials website?
It is www.dmvbeneficials.com.
Perfect. Okay, for someone who doesn't live in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, that's what it stands for, right?
That is what it stands for. We didn't, like I said, we didn't plan to form an organization, and we definitely didn't plan to form a national organization. So it does mean DC, Maryland, Virginia, but that's just the name now.
I thought it was like Department of Motor Vehicles. Right? Like, I was like, wait, that has nothing to do with it.
Love
it. Love it.
But now the name always tells the origin story. Yes, so, you know, it's exactly perfect.
That's where we start.
Well, thank you so much again, Jamie, for joining us. And like I said earlier, you can find her on Instagram at Copper Lattice. You can also find us on Instagram at Let's Talk Talk Hoya. And you can also find your hosts individually on Instagram. I am at Not Dude.
I'm at thegreenplant.az.
And I'm at Perritos y Plants. Adios.
Annyeong.
Bye.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.